Show your T-ball team spirit and buy your hard-working Art Lab team a cup of coffee, which helps fuel purchases of high-octane equipment and T-ball tech that get poured back into percolating, highly caffeinated content for you. Just go to buymeacoffee.com and search Therapy Bites.
On this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, welcome Therapy Bites Art Labbers. And for those new listeners and viewers on our YouTube channel, that stands for Accurate Realistic Thinking and Life-Affirming Beliefs. And it is our pleasure and yours too to have Rodolfo D'Angeli here today to talk about life masterpiece, The Psychology of Surviving and Thriving. Now, Rodolfo is a coach and a modern-day shaman who's built a following of thousands of people worldwide. Over the past 12 years, he's popularized the vision of life artist and founded the companies Life Artist Mastery and Ancient Ceremonies. Wow, that sounds kind of spooky, doesn't it? You'll have to stay tuned to get all the details. He helps people conquer their fears, heal trauma, and find their bliss. His mission is to encourage holistic healing, profound spiritual realization, gosh, that's right up my alley, and dynamic personal empowerment, including lasting positive life transformation through a combination of modern strategies and ancient practices I'm going to bet you guys have never heard of. And this is all to help committed middle-aged men and women. Gosh, I wonder if I'm middle-aged or if I'm beyond that at this point. But to help folks change their lives and find lasting fulfillment. He also, interestingly enough, dedicates part of his life to improving Peru's indigenous people's lives through philanthropy. Join us coming up on the episode.
Be tuned following the interview for On the Couch and Off the Rocker, our special guest's psychosilly analysis by Art Lab's own head cabbager, Dr. Ima Freudnot.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Hey guys, welcome, and we have Rodolfo D'Angeli joining us as promised to talk about the mechanics of life artistry, the mechanics of balancing lights and shadows in your life, turning your mess into a message, isn't that cool, and overcoming drama, trauma, and self-sabotage.
Stay in the stands at the end of the interview, T-Ballers, and witness our special guest slug a bite-sized brain ball with your name all over it, clean out of the art lab.
Rodolfo, thank you for being here today. It is just so wonderful to have you. You're all the way on the other side of the planet, aren't you?
All the side of the world, my man. When I was listening to you introducing, I was looking around. I'm like, who is he talking about?
It must be that other guest, huh?
Who is this guy? You know, I want to meet that guy, you know. But yeah, on the other side of the world, Melbourne, Australia. I'm originally from Italy, but moved here in 2003 to escape my past. But unfortunately,
well, you know, you said you're from Italy, and I was going to guess with that accent, you're not from Arkansas. You're not from the South. You might have noticed I have a bit of a Southern accent. And yeah, but we're so glad to have you here, and we're going to love digging into your story. I really loved how you talked about light and dark and artistry. But before I get ahead of myself, tell us a little bit about you and your story.
Where do I start? Let me start on the beginning. Actually, I'm very familiar with your accent because one of my teachers, unfortunately, passed away in 2019. Mr. Don Howard Lawler, he was from Kentucky. So I am kind of familiar with that Southern accent, and it's kind of like refreshing to hear it again. It brings back lots of beautiful memories. But where did this all start? I mean, I was born in Switzerland. My parents migrated from Italy to Switzerland in the late 50s. I was born in 69, and my parents decided to give me to foster parents. I want to just quickly add something to this. You know, today is actually the first time I'm actually live again. I'm actually back into the world. My first ever appearance in 8 months. Okay, so May this year, I literally removed myself from, probably early June, I removed myself from all social media. Matter of fact, if you look me up on Facebook or Instagram or anywhere under Rodolfo De Angeli, you'll see there's no post since about that time. There's probably one or two in between, but more or less I was away. And I haven't podcast. I have my own podcast as well. Haven't done any of that. Haven't been on any shows. Today is literally the let me say, a new beginning, a new chapter that is carrying on from this past 8 months, which was one of the toughest periods in my life, matter of fact. And it's strange for me to say that because I did go through quite a bit in my life. And I thought that I had a lot of the things, you know, kind of like in a shelf, you know, put on the shelf. Okay, I know what this is about. I know what this is connected to and so on and so forth. Yet at the beginning of this year or May this year, I traveled to Europe. I traveled to Italy to see my mother, which, by the way, I had a great relationship after many, many years of not having one. So we pretty much reconnected at 2015 after, you know, she gave me away foster parents and a lot of drama that came from that. But we reconnected. And so this year we're supposed to go back to Europe and take care of her. And my mom is 89 years old, and happy family and finish up this journey together. In a matter of fact, everything went completely the opposite. I realized who my mother really was. And you only do that when you spend enough time with someone where someone cannot hide behind a camera, you know, behind a phone or anything like that. But now you're there. Now you're living with the person. Now you're seeing the traits. Now you get to know who the person's beliefs and values and thoughts and everything and habits and everything is, right?
And I like to say that time is the great detective. Time is the great detective. There's no need in mind reading or body language reading. Just give it time. Guys, listening, time is the great detective.
Absolutely. You cannot hide. The Buddha said three things you can't hide in life. It's the sun, the moon, and the truth. And I believe that very, 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 very much so. And so this journey that's supposed to become a very pleasant and very enjoyable journey that I went on with my wife, we traveled overseas, and it became absolute terror. I'm telling you, it became absolute terror, so much so that it required for me to dig into every single toolbox that I have put together in the last 40 years of my life, but definitely the last 12 years of my life on this hero's journey that I say after my attempted suicide, and really shook me to my core. And I think it changed a lot of things for me. And so when you ask me, you know, how is your story? I really find myself for the first time ever that the story that I was telling actually doesn't work anymore. Actually, that was the wrong story. It's like reading a book, right? It's like reading a book and you are at the end of the book and you believe you know everything about it, but now someone is giving you a bunch of extra pages, and it's telling you that the characters that we actually read about are actually not the ones that we thought they were. And so my story here with you today is actually very enlightening for me, very humbling as well, because I realized at 53 that my story just changed, and perhaps my story just became real.
That's an amazing way to look at it. I tell people frequently, patients frequently, I'm a private practice clinician, that we all have a book of life, and it's all about us, and it's just jam full of pages. Let's just say a page for every day you've lived. Well, goodness, that's 365 pages you hear. The wonderful thing about it, and here's what I want to dig into with you, is that it's not just what's out there that gets to write it. We get to be the editors. Absolutely. And I think healthy living is about being a really good editor, and that involves deciding what to think. In other words, empowering ourselves, taking back and grabbing hold of our power, and we get to decide how to interpret that book of life. And I find the temptation people have is they want to rip out pages of that life. You know, they want to choose this page and that page and the other page and just completely edit those out. And I usually recommend to people to try to find value in those pages, because my experience is that if you start ripping out pages, you just have a much thinner book of life. And then you rip out another, and you don't have a book of life at all. You basically just simply have a pamphlet. You have a pamphlet. You have less of a life. But it's all about interpretation, and I look forward to digging in that. I love how you really talk about the comparison of life or art on a canvas, and your life itself as that canvas. And then there's the whole interplay between light and dark. How did you come up with that? That's a huge realization. Where did that even come from?
that's a great question. Actually, it didn't come from me.
Well, as they say, originality is the art of concealing your sources. You know, I'm just glad that you're putting it out there.
The terminology wasn't mine. The life artist wasn't mine. But what came from it, then the realization of what that actually is came from me. So life artist actually was a term that a friend of mine that I met in Peru many years ago, and that came in to visit again many years ago as well. That's 2017. He came here to Melbourne and visit me and so on. He called me life artist for the first time. And that's then, on top of that, he asked me what I believe a life artist is. And that's where the whole life artist thing came out. And so the reason why he called me a life artist was because over the years knowing me, he told me that. And that, and the morning, that particular morning he was here visiting my house, my family, he watched me make a coffee for him in the morning. And, you know, while having a chat, he said, you know, I got to tell you something. You really are a life artist. And I remember myself saying, what's a life artist, you know? And he said, you know, when I look at you doing something, it feels like you would, everything you do is the best of. It's like this morning I saw you make a coffee, and you were waiting for this coffee to come out of the machine, and you were looking at like it was the best machine in the world, making the best coffee in the world and in the best cup in the world. You were literally taking it all in. And so when he asked me about what a life artist is and what I believe today and through this journey, what I believe the life artist is the person, and it's exactly what you just said before, Heath, is what you said, you know, people want to rip out the pages of the book. And that is such a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous thing to do. And that is also why I believe my hallucination is that is one of the motives, probably one of the biggest motives why people get lost. If we take away part of our life because we do not like that and we do not want to associate with that, and we try as much as we can to push it away, we are pushing away a part of ourselves. And that is the shadow that I always talk about, the shadow and the light. Once we embrace the both, that is the trick. A great master, a great artist, again, painting a painting. Why did that painting become a masterpiece? Because the artist had mastery over the combination of shadows and lights. He had mastery over taking the shadow and balancing with light, and also taking the light and balancing with the shadow. Because as I was saying, in the spiritual world, or perhaps in the pseudo-spiritual world, everybody wants to be light. But too much light will burn. If you fly too close to the sun, you will burn. You need to have a balance between light and shadow. that's the moment that the humility will come in and Spirit, God, whatever someone believes in is actually taking us down. And let us understand that, like Socrates said 2,000 plus years ago, we don't know nothing. Repelling parts of ourselves is the worst thing we can do and the fastest way to get lost. And so the life artist, like I say, you know, the creation of our own masterpiece through our own life journey is taking our shadows, taking our lights, taking our goals and things that we achieved, but also taking the pain and all the places, the little dungeons that we had to go through and put them together and create this beautiful masterpiece. When I always say life is a preparation to death and not as a dark thing, but I believe life is a preparation to death because you want to live as much life as possible so that when you come at the end of it, which we all will, we will lay there and ready to go home rather than wishing to be given another 5 minutes to do something we held ourselves back from doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is what the life artist is for me. See?
And those of you watching by a YouTube channel, I've just popped up our little graphic called ARTY, A-R-T-Y, and that stands for Accurate Realistic Thoughts. And ARTY is holding a lantern. That is the lantern of Diogenes. Diogenes, a famous Cynic philosopher, used to roam the streets in the daytime with a lantern, and people thought he was just nuts. I can identify that with myself, but I have lots of nutty ideas. And they asked Diogenes, "What are you doing with this lantern?" And he said, "I'm looking for an honest man. I'm looking for an honest person." And we put this lantern in the hand of ARTY. ARTY's fashioned after a neuron because there is an art to living, we say in the art lab, and that is accurate, realistic thinking. And that's our little graphic for that. And you can decide how to think in ways that serve your life the best, even about the darkest moments. I often tell people it's easy to be first place. It's easy to have wonderfully fuzzy, wuzzy, joyful moments. I mean, anybody can do that. I've never had one single patient come in and me ask them, "What would you like to accomplish?" And they said this. This has never happened. "You know, doc, I'm just too happy all the time. It's got to stop. I mean, there's just too much light. I've just got to get rid of it. There's too many good things that happen to me." You see, anybody can do that. And I don't think we get really stronger during those light moments and during those preferred moments. I think that our strength and resilience comes from those dark moments. And you really can't run away from those. I like the quote that you had about Seneca, that you take yourself with you everywhere you go. And Socrates, I think, had a similar quote. And he called himself a citizen of the world. You know, you never can escape yourself. You can go to Italy, Australia, excuse me, Arkansas. You always take yourself with you. And therefore, it's best to look deeply into your own life, into your own book of life, and see what value that you can find in each moment. And by the way, every moment, Seneca also talked about that by the time we reach death, there's really very little death left because every moment is a death. This moment, and you can hear it thundering outside, by the way, we're having thunderstorms here, thank goodness. Speaking of darkness and things like that, it's dark here and it's a thunderstorm. But by the time we reach death, there's very little death left because every moment of life is the death of that moment. It really depends on, are we going to let it die full of meaning that we've injected into it, or whether we're going to catastrophize it and try to run away from it. And it sounds like you've made a life out of looking at the beauty of the interplay between light and darkness. And I'd like to hear how we all can follow suit and do some of the same things and use some of the same strategies.
I believe it's the moment we become authentic again. I think pain and trauma is the moment we let go of that authenticity, right? We are young kids, you know, we all born and we all little and we all need protection and we all, you know, crave the love of the person that, you know, we love most or the people that are around us and so on and so forth. Yet, you know, as we grow, we have our own traits. And if we feel that the person we crave the love the most doesn't like those traits, we stop doing those and we let go of that authenticity. And eventually down the track, you know, we are grown-ups which don't know who we are. We're trying to jump onto the next thing every so often because we believe that is behind that next thing, that happiness, which is really what everybody craves, Lise. It's probably in the next job. It's probably in the next success. It's probably in the next car, relationship, house, clothing, money, whatever, right? Yet when we arrive there and we turn it around, we find that it's not there anymore. It was just there for a split second. And so I always work, you know, the way I work with my clients is I instead of getting them to achieve something to fill a void, which is what most people, I believe, do, I get them to become the person who will achieve that goal so that happiness and the goal becomes a representation of the person rather than a void to be filled, right? And so the moment we re-embrace ourselves, the authenticity, right? Embracing the shadows, embracing the lights, embracing the whole package, looking at ourselves in the mirror and say, you know what? I love you. I love the person I see there. I know you're full of shit, but everybody else is too, and that is okay, right?
We're all fallible. We're all flawed. There are no perfect humans.
It's a tragedy if there was such thing as perfection.
For full show notes and transcript of today's episode, go to therapybites.podbean.com.
Welcome to Social Media Smackdown. Tonight, the irresistible force meets the illogical object. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to reason!
Hey, T-Ballers, there was a recent sabotaging post by a platform on Instagram called Mental Health Pathways, and they're trying to sell an app, but they're also promoting clickbait misinformation to do it. They posted that others invalidating your feelings or validating your feelings either caused or reduced anxiety. Hey, listen up and shut down the Kool-Aid drinking psychological nonsense of posts like this and take back the power of your own thinking. Feelings cannot be valid or invalid, though they may be congruent or incongruent. That means a good fit or not a good fit for a certain situation. Imagine being depressed at winning $1 million. That would be incongruent. Or being ecstatic at a loved one's funeral. Again, that'd be incongruent. Not valid or invalid, but congruent or incongruent. Moreover, no one has the power to make you think of your emotions as valid or invalid because emotions can never be either. Imagine deciding if yellow or purple are valid colors. What nonsense. They're colors and they're supposed to exist just like your emotions. Feel what you feel, but focus on your thinking. What you decide to think is what dictates your emotions, not other people, and certainly not silly Kool-Aid drinking psychological nonsense posts like this one. Stick around and enjoy the rest of the episode.
What a slobber knocker! The winner by psychological smackdown, Doug Heath! No pronouns were harmed during the production of this podcast.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab.
bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball Team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
Welcome to the Therapy Bites Art Lab Library, where we have pored over thousands of volumes to bring you the latest Couch Crumbs quote. Oh, would you like a napkin? You're getting crumbs in the book.
That okay. Me eat book.
Oh. And now today's Couch Crumbs quote.
You're just getting so many crumbs on the couch. Instead of trying to be better than someone else, work to be healthier than the self that existed yesterday. A quote by Dr. Heath.
Oh, you got crumbs on the couch. Extra points for you.
Live the art life. Become a T-Ball teammate, inner circle supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/therapybites.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
A leader is not a person we follow just because he tells us what to do, but a leader is someone we follow because he has the same views and values that we kind of have. And perhaps that person is maybe a half a step ahead. I'd never believe that someone is way ahead of us or above us. I believe, you know, people are just that one chapter ahead of us. And so when we recognize that within the mess, that's why I say within the mess that we believe our life is, if we can find that message within that, we can change the world. And together, imagine you and I now talking. I don't even know. I never met you, right? And yet we're talking about things that perhaps if I say this, what is he going to think if I say I'm scared? What is he going to think if I'm saying I'm thriving for this or that or whatever? So we hold ourselves back. What happens? You're not authentic. And so the moment you're not authentic, you're lost. It's lost, right? A cat, I got three cats. They don't want to be a dog. I can't ask them, but I know they don't. They're happy to be a cat. They're happy to have the colors they have. They're happy to be the way they are. They're happy to be, right? What we forgot is to be. And now we became human doers rather than human beings. And we always afraid about tomorrow. We always afraid about the future. But the future is like a shadow. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist, right?
That is so true.
Right? And so what about now? What about now? I always ask, you know, my wife, you know, was diagnosed with cancer and she's fine today and everything like that. But, you know, when the fear comes up, I ask her always, how are you now? Don't tell me how you might be tomorrow or what might happen in 10 years time. Tell me how you are right now. And Heath, most of the time, if we stay in the present moment right now and we ask ourselves, how am I right now? We're usually all fine, right? There's no problem. We're literally no problem right now. The problem happens as soon as we want to take ourselves a slight little bit back or a slight little bit forward, because both of those are out of control. The past doesn't exist. The future didn't even happen.
And so, I agree. I mean, I think that people talk about, I talked to a patient the other day, they're talking about living in the past, and that's a common colloquialism, but think about that. There is no way to live in the past. All you're doing is wasting the present. There is no way to live in the future. All you're doing is wasting the present. And as a friend of mine, a fellow colleague, Dr. David Zuniga, talked about, he said, if you miss the moment, then if you miss enough of them, you've missed your whole day. If you keep missing enough of them, you missed your whole month, and you keep going, you've missed your whole life. The key is not to miss the moment, to fully fill the moment with everything that you. And I love what you say about the dog. You know, when I see a dog, my dog, his name is Scruffy, by the way. He's a cute little bugger. He's 14 years old. He's getting kind of elderly. But he is fully 100% dog. He doesn't go around acting like a cat, trying to be a cat, trying to climb a tree like a squirrel. And that reminds me of one of my favorite quotes. If you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will go through life thinking it's stupid. And that's an Einstein quote. But you have humans trying to climb trees. They're trying to climb the tree of the Kardashians and the tree of Britney Spears and the tree of Michael Jordan or whatever pop star. They're trying to climb the tree of people that if they really knew them, they wouldn't even like them. People look at movie stars and people in Hollywood and they're all enamored. And I'm not judging these people. I'm saying what you see is a representation that is highly curated for the stage and screen. That is not that person. If they lived with you in your house and dug into your refrigerator and used your bathroom and used up all the toilet paper, it would take a few days and you would get sick and tired of them. It doesn't matter how brightly their star shines in Hollywood. They are still just a human. But let me specify. The highest thing that you or I can ever be is human. And that is so far beyond any labels. We humans, we love labels because, well, it does enhance communication. I mean, if you ask me, hand me your phone, and we're eating Christmas dinner, it's better to hand you this phone I'm holding up than a handful of mashed potatoes because I misunderstood what you wanted. But the problem gets, folks, when you start giving yourself a label. And every time, and that, by the way, this comes from Jean-Paul Sartre, one of my favorite existentialist philosophers. When you give yourself a label, you automatically become less. Labels always make us less. The highest label that you can ever be bequeathed is human. Not Republican or Democrat or liberal or conservative or, you know, whatever orientation or religion or anything, but just human. And I think that we should get back to the business of being fully human. But there's something holding us back. What do you think, Rodolfo, is holding us back from 100% fully embracing our humanity?
Well, most people believe, and trust me, I was one of those, we are not good enough. Right? And so, right? I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy to be of being loved. So I got to change. I got to be something, right? I got to be who does that person across from me want me to be? Okay. So let me understand over a variety of catch-ups what I need to be for that person for it to give me the love I'm craving. And so I'm changing myself slowly and slowly. It's like the mask we put on, right? And so, and what happens to our authenticity? It's out the window yet again, right? And so for this person, we are this. For that person, we are that. For our wives or husbands, we are this. For our kids, for our colleagues, we are all of these people, yet we are not the one that we actually are, which is ourselves. Because we believe, or society, like you said, you know, you look at the at social media and whatever else, you know, we see life out of a 1/200 of millisecond, you know, someone's life, which is not true, yet it's so well presented that people believe it is. And so the moment we don't accept ourselves, like you say, with the dog, with my cat, we don't accept ourselves for who we are, with the shadows and the life, with the flaws and our prizes, that is the moment where things go pear-shaped, right? People get lost.
Speaking of lost, by the way, I run into people that talk about they want to go find themselves. And for me, I think that's a short trip. I think it's a short trip for most of us in most homes. The best way to find yourself outside of using geolocate on your cell phone that tells you exactly where you are is to go look in the bathroom mirror. That is you. And let me solve the riddle for those of you listening. You were enough. You were important. You were valuable from your very first breath. From that moment on, everything else is a delusion. Everything else that someone may tell you that you're not enough is a lie and an inaccuracy. Let's start there. Let's start that you are enough right now in this moment. You're the whole package. All that's left are accurate, realistic thoughts, which lead to healthy pathways. And That's what all of us struggle with, is what's the healthiest thing, the most accurate, realistic thing that I can think about myself, others, the world around me, and also what can I think about the light and the darkness in my life and the interplay between that. I was going to kind of dive deep here because, and this is very personal for Rodolfo, and we really appreciate him being there for us and being willing to share this, but you have this in your bio, and I'm interested in the suicide attempt. What was it that happened the minute before attempting suicide that for you changed everything?
I saw my wife smile. I saw my wife have a hysterical laugh. that was what happened. So I was I was in my garage. It was on the floor, sitting on the floor, and behind me was a motorcycle. I used to race superbikes, and I still had my bike there. And so I was laying with my back towards my bike, which I loved a lot. Spent a lot of time on it and had a lot of adventures on it. And in front of me was the setup. Was all, the whole setup for me, ready to, I guess, you know, get out of here. I believed life was more painful than death. And so that was a moment where everything came to an end for me. But it wasn't the right time yet. And so I was sitting there, but then the moment for me came that I felt, okay, this is me. And behind me, there was a window which you couldn't see in because he had like a kind of like a like a mirrory kind of finish, and you could only see from the inside out. And what I could see was the back of my house, the lounge room of my house, and my wife was watching TV. And as I turn around and I look at her to kind of farewell, she burst out in this incredible hysterical laughter because of what she was watching. And so something made her laugh so much that she literally lost her shit, right? And I was watching at that, and something came into my mind. And the question was, or the realization was, there has to be more to life than misery. There has to be more to life than misery. And so with that realization, I aborted the whole thing. And I went out and I went to her and you know, we had a chat over what was happening. But that was what happened for me. That was the aha moment, that realization, that moment of nearly no return, that life, spirit, God, whatever someone believes in, got me to the point where literally I was on my knees, humbled. There was no more going deeper. And there was a moment that something was given. Something was given. Realize there has to be more to life than misery. But you are responsible for your own rescue. Nobody will come and rescue you. Nobody will. You will have to do it. And so for me, at that moment on, and that's 2010, so 12 years, right? That's not a heck of a long time. That was a moment for me to become, to start on this journey, on the start of, okay, who am I, right? Who am I now? After I was 40 years old, 41, who am I? I'm a man. I got all of this would happen, whatever, but who am I really? And it was a time for me to go and discover. And like you said before, you know, you can go to the mirror and you can literally look at yourself and say, you know, this is who I am. The thing that I have realized though is when we have buried ourselves for so long, what we see in the mirror is only the surfaces was left. Now we got to go and find ourselves behind what we see, behind the curtain.
Well, and because would you say that for you had become a very distorted view of yourself?
Well, I didn't know who I was, right? I had no idea who I was. I tried to be all these things. I tried to be, well, as a kid, I tried to be loved because my parents didn't want me. And so I grew up with foster parents until 11, right? And so who am I? Why do they not want me? What's wrong with me? Why can I not be loved? Why do my parents not come to the school reunions? Why do I not do all of these things? Where are they? Who are they? Yes, I see them every so often because they, you know, to feel a little bit better with themselves, they will come and bring me a gift. But who are they? And more so, who am I? And what do I do to be loved? And so what did I become? Definitely I became a people pleaser. I wasn't ever able to say no. Yes to anything and everything, as long as you can love me. As long
I'd like to draw a parallel for our listeners between what Rodolfo just described and another couple of diagnostic categories. And you know, from listening to me on the podcast, I'm not a big fan of diagnoses, and this is just to kind of help you guys understand. If you have on one end of the continuum people that are higher on the psychopathy scale, that's one of my areas of expertise in neuropsychology, forensic psychology, is psychopathy, and something like that, something happens, then someone higher in psychopathy, it's not their fault, it's someone else's fault. Part of psychopathy is narcissism. People higher in narcissism, there's no such thing as a narcissist. There are folks that are higher in that trait. And by the way, you guys listening, please don't go diagnosing without a license. That's just a bad idea. And don't diagnose your families and friends and neighbors. That is a worse idea. Leave that to the professionals. I'm a professional. I don't even diagnose my family, friends, and neighbors. That would be unethical. But if you're higher in those traits, it's everyone else's fault. Now, let's go to everybody else, like Rodolfo. For everybody else, we start out that it must be us. If someone leaves us, it must be us. If someone doesn't show us care, affection, deference, if they want out of the relationship, if they cast us aside for, even drugs or a job or what they think is the next newest best thing, then we automatically go to it is us. Now, I'm going to put a statistical term on that called a false positive. And a false positive is saying, this is the effect, but it's not. It is a false positive. It was never, ever Rodolfo. It was the other people. And why was it them? What was the problem? Well, who knows? I mean, maybe they were just unhealthy people. Maybe they had a psychological disorder. Maybe they weren't in charge of their executive functioning. Maybe they were sick in some way. I mean, who knows what it is? But the worst thing you can do, T-ballers, Therapy Bites Art Labbers, is you can just, the worst thing to do is to personalize, incorporate into yourself, everything that happens must just be me. Because here's a little bit of neuroscience for you, and I've pointed this out before, and I'll point it out again today. Above your ear is an area that takes care of that. I call it the disgust cortex, and I won't get into a neuroscience lesson, but we can actually develop a lot of self-directed disgust toward us. And I find as a practicing clinician that that's one of the things that is most responsible for suicide. People develop such a disgust toward themselves through all this sabotaging thinking that they think that they need to erase themselves from existence. They need to unburden the planet of themselves or unburden their family of themselves. But that's resulting from a cognitive distortion. That is a distorted way of thinking. I often say it's not guns and drugs and slit wrists and ropes and a gut full of sedatives that kill people. It's distorted thinking. Would you say, what was your distorted thinking in that moment? I think you mentioned it. You said that suffering, misery, death must be better than misery. And I love how you put that because that seems so familiar.
I think life is more painful than death.
Life is more painful than death. Now, let me point out something that's going to twist everybody's noodle. I hope it twists your noodle, especially if you're thinking about harming yourself in some way. To know that death is better than life, you would have to know what death is. And we don't. The best scientists in the world have never figured it out. No one has been there and come back. Yes, there's the near-death experiences, but even they can't adequately describe it. You kind of have to know what it is to know if it's better, and it's not. What I find, and I'd like to run this by you, Rodolfo, because I have a YouTube video, a series of three I'm about to put up. And one of the things I say there is that in my experience, and I've done this for 38 years now, is ultimately when I describe the process of dying, of bleeding out, or overdosing, or a person strangling themselves with a rope or any other method of death, when I describe what happens after, and then I ask, is that what you're after? Or, it's a big or, behind door number two is a more fulfilling life, less tragedy, more interpersonal social connection, reciprocal love. Most people, actually 100%, no one ever chooses the embalming fluid. No one ever chooses the embalming fluid. No one's ever said, you know, Doc, after you've talked about the Y-cut and exsanguination and the embalming fluid, man, I think what I want is the embalming fluid. No one's ever said that, which tells me that suicide, again, is based on a cognitive distortion. What people really want is less pain. And something I say to that is pain is absolute. We're all going to have pain in life, but misery is optional. Pain is going to happen, but misery is optional. And guess, dear listener, who decides that? You and I decide that based on what we decide to tell ourselves, as Rodolfo is presenting to us so well today, the interplay between the lightness and the darkness in our lives and finding value in both. Now, that was a big wake-up call for you. What happened next?
I think for me, it was, you know, as a kid trying to fit in, so becoming a people pleaser and so on and so forth. So at 40, I had so many things that I've done or not done that got me to, when I was looking at myself, like you were saying before, in the mirror, I wasn't liking who I was seeing. But not only that, I didn't know who I was seeing. And so for me, I believe the journey to where I am today was reconnecting all of those stories, even though this year, as life well always has these beautiful tricks, that brings in a little bit more to yourself, which is, I think the journey this year has been quite challenging because perhaps I didn't adapt to the change as fast as I should have. Yet I did require a little bit more time to really let everything sink in and be able to understand it. Because I don't believe, and that's my hallucination, that we cannot heal until we can understand. So I believe that growth is necessary before healing can happen. Growth in, we need to understand the real story, not the story we told ourselves, because that's a lie. And also, it was a way for us to cope. And also, it changed over the years, because obviously, as we change, so is the story. But now it's a time where we have to really go and understand what the reality of things are. Like the Buddha says, the moon, you can't hide, you know, from the moon, the sun, and the truth. What is the truth? And so the closer I get to my truth and show who I am with all my flaws and everything, that is when I go home. That's when I can heal. That's when I can accept myself for who I am. Now I don't want to be anybody else. Now I don't want to say no, sorry, yes, if I don't want to, because I don't care what you think of me, because that's only your perception of me. It's not that you don't know me. Right? Or perhaps you're not taking enough time to know me. So now you're judging me, but your judgment does not affect me anymore. Okay. And that is actually something that happened this year with my mother as she was, you know, speaking me in ways that actually blew me away. But, and it did affect me. It did affect me. Yet there was a moment I remember when she said something to me, and that was the moment it just switched for me. And I said to my mother, you know, mother, this used to hurt me, but it will not anymore.
Wow.
That was the moment I reclaimed my power. I had to, though. See?
Wow, and I fantastic. Went from a moment,
right? And I went from a moment of, and that was huge for me, Heath, huge. And this is also the work I do with shamanism and so on. And it was the moment of thinking and seeing rather than judging and looking. I needed to hear rather than listening. So instead of seeing my mother as a bad person, as a person that had no empathy, as a person who was self-centered and everything was about her, and she was incredibly skilled in manipulating and making you feel certain way, this, that, the other, I needed to go behind the curtain. That was the false reality, like you were saying before. False positive, false reality. What if her role in this life was to help me grow above that, get away from the judgment? What about the only thing I can repay her was with love? Not accepting the BS, but loving her to put me in a situation where I am now able to grow in a way that no one and nothing would ever make me grow in that way. And so I believe that if I had the mother I wanted, I will not be the man I am.
She was kind of the chisel,
right?
Sculpting away things, and it's back to never waste a hurt. You know,
right?
If not for that difficulty, mom chiseling out and sharpening and you finding value in that, no, I think you'd be someone very, very different. And I want to point out that you, as Rodolfo said, you can love and set a boundary. You
Absolutely.
Can love and you can decide how to hear. I'm pointing at my ear. You can love and decide to hear what someone's saying. And it's usually much more about them than it is about you. Only you get to decide that. And you don't have to incorporate all of that as your own makeup of how you view and how you see yourself. What were some more of the huge differences between that moment of considering suicide and that moment where you decided to both love and to set that boundary with your mother? What was the difference?
Grab some of this episode's guest merchandise, specially designed to help keep this episode's message top of mind in your life. Don't forget friends and family members who could use an Art Lab mental boost too. Just go to therapybites.myshopify.com.
Hey, T-Ballers. Thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team. Next time on Therapy Bites Art Lab.
And so make sure that you guys go back and catch part one. We're going to split it right down the middle and do an intro and an outro. This is such great information. But to cap off our two-part episode here, share with us a couple, one or two, of your favorite secrets to life artistry, some hacks to life artistry that you've seen work with yourself and have really worked with other people that our listeners can get started trying right away.
Government legal gobbledygook. Therapy Bites is not intended as a diagnostic or as an alternative to professional clinical treatment. Resources and advice are for information and entertainment purposes only. Brought to you by someone saying things you don't like? Tape that nagging loudmouth shut. Government-approved speech tape. Gas tape. Now available at your local hardware store. Therapy Bites Art Lab is not an approved, endorsed, authorized, butt-kissing affiliate of the United States Special Offense Assessment Police. SOAP for short. Warning! Consumption of Therapy Bites Art Lab content by Kool-Aid drinking, stinking, thinking, social media, pseudo-psychological pushing, wacky woke, anti-free speech, mumbo-jumbo advocates may cause spontaneous internal skull combustion, stomach discomfort, and or laxative effects. Allergy warning. Therapy Bites is manufactured in a facility that challenges nutty distortions, processes nuggets of accurate, realistic thinking, and life-affirming beliefs. This is the audio version of the legal fine print. Why are you still listening to this when you can catch the next great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab with a good friend or family member? Really? Are you still there? This is getting silly. Move on to the next psychologically thrilling episode of the best advice on the net. No copay required.
Me eat copay.
With Dr. Heath and the T-Ball team. Go ahead, don't be podgoraphobic. Scoot, scoot, scoot. On to the next episode.